Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 23rd, 2015. This is episode 1214. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With a built-in HD camera and microphone, you can monitor your front door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like being home even when you're not. Right now, get $10 off the Ring Video Doorbell when you go to ring.com/tech guy. And by the new Epson Workforce printers powered by Precision Core. Workforce is an award-winning line of all-in-one printers for your home office, small to large business, or corporate work groups. Visit Epson.com to find out more. And by Next Issue, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anywhere, anytime, using your phone or your tablet. For your free 30-day trial, visit nextissue.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A or Canada. Outside that area, well, you just call via Skype. The phone ranger, Kim Schaffer, will answer your call. Is it okay if I call you the phone ranger? Heather doesn't have the trademark on that or anything, does she?
Go ahead. It works for both. We're interchangeable.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean to imply that you're identical or anyway, but good. Heather is not here on Sundays. Kim Schaffer is from now on, which is nice. Thank you for being here. And we're taking your calls about technology. Anything that's on your mind, anything that's bothering you, puzzling you, you want some definitions, some explanations, help you choose some hardware or get rid of some hardware. Interesting, the schools, I just read an article in the Times, the New York Times, it says schools are increasingly, a lot of schools these days want to get kids computer literate, and many schools have what they call a one-to-one or two-to-one programs, where they have one or two students per computer. And for a long time, that was a Mac or a PC, but lately, iPads, even more lately, Chromebooks. Notebooks, those are little inexpensive notebooks, often $200, that run an operating system from Google called the Chrome OS, which is basically a browser. You know, and whatever extensions and plugins you can install on that browser, which in the case of Chrome is a pretty complete set. And because it's got, unlike an iPad, it's got a real keyboard, internet access that makes it possible to, you know, open web pages, do research, and write papers, save them on Google Docs. Very popular with schools. Very inexpensive. And apparently huge. An upstart. According to IDC, which is a group that analyzes this kind of thing, about 13.2 million computers were shipped in 2014. That's about a third more than the year before. Apple made the most money on the sector, nearly half of the total dollars spent, but those are expensive. In sheer number of devices sold, Windows, still the leader. Last year, about almost 5 million Windows devices were shipped to schools, 38% market share. Apple, 4.2 million devices, 32% market share, but picking up in the back there, Chromebooks. Almost 4 million Chromebooks were sold to education last year. And that increase is 310%. iPad unit sales down from 2.9 million to 2.7 million. I think schools are right. I think schools are realizing, and it's interesting because I watch schools in this area, our area. For instance, my stepson's school, he's a seventh grader, went from Chromebooks to iPads. They went from a 2-to-1 to a 1-to-1, quadrupling their costs, actually. I guess they must have got some funding somewhere. But remember the L.A. Unified School District, which floated a 30-year bond to buy iPads? They're now suing Apple and the company Pearson Education to create the curriculum, saying they never delivered. The iPods arrived, but they didn't arrive ready to go. They didn't have the software on them. They weren't usable. They ended up gathering dust. Microsoft number one in volume, Apple number one in revenue, but Chromebook is coming on strong, and I think that's great. Secure, reliable, inexpensive, easy to fix. Something goes wrong, the student messes it up. There's a feature on the Chromebook called Power Wash. It just wipes it all out and starts over as if it were brand new from the factory in a matter of a couple of minutes. And because students are using Google IDs, and these are special Google for Education IDs, privacy-protected IDs. They're using those IDs. They get a new Chromebook or they power wash their old one. They're right back to where they started because everything's being stored in the cloud. In the first half of this year, 2.4 million Chromebooks were shipped compared to 2.2 million Windows-based computers. Suddenly, this year looks like will be the year of the Chromebook. And I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, you might have heard me lately recommending Chromebooks for many of you. A lot of times, a full-blown operating system like Macintosh or Windows or Linux is too much. It does more than you need. It adds complexity, raises security concerns, privacy concerns. Sometimes a simple browser is all you need. Many people call me and say, here's what I do. I browse, I surf the net, and I do email. Chromebook's perfect that, as is iPad. iPad's a good choice, too. It's just a lot more expensive. Especially, you know, for schools, they have to develop special software for it and so forth. Chromebook just uses stuff online. Whatever's online, that's what it uses. I don't mind this. I think it's a good thing. I was skeptical of Chromebooks. In fact, I remember getting a little kitchen debate at Google with the guy who was at the time in charge of Chromebooks, Sundar Pichai, who's in charge of Chrome OS. I said, I don't understand the point of this. Why would you buy a computer that's just a browser? And he patiently, very considering what I was saying, very patiently explained to me, oh, no, this is for education, for people who don't need more than a browser. It's secure, it's simple, it's fast. He was right. By the way, he's now the CEO of Google. He was so right, he propelled himself right to the top. What do you think of this reorganization of Google there? It doesn't make any difference probably to most of us. We're not going to all of us, the new holding company is called Alphabet. We're not going to all of us start saying, I'm going to alphabet the web. Let me alphabet that name. I'm going to use Alphabet Maps. No, it's all still going to be Google. But they're taking some of the wilder, weirder lab stuff out, putting it under a separate roof with its own CEO, each with its own CEO. Interesting. I don't think it's going to change anything. What it really changes is that now the CEO of Google is no longer Larry Page, one of its founders, but Sundar Pichai. And he'll be a good executive. He'll run it well. He's a smart guy. He's a very well-spoken, intelligent fella. And Larry and Sergey, the original Stanford computer science PhD candidates who started Google, it's been 15 years now. They're ready to just take it a little bit easy. Take some of those billions, invest them in things they're interested in. Flying cars. Well, certainly self-driving cars, almost flying cars. One of the spin-off divisions is called Calico. It's all about life extension, longevity. Sergey has invested some money into a synthetic meat company. They make hamburgers out of something grown in a tube, I guess. It's apparently quite tasty. It's great when you have people like Larry and Sergey and Elon Musk and others who are just visionaries and have a lot of money now and just say, you know, instead of just piling up more money, I'm going to see what I can do to put that money towards bettering humankind, whether it's giant balloons that fly in the stratosphere, above the stratosphere, carrying internet to the entire globe. That's Google's aptly named Project Loon. working on, as Bill Gates is doing, working on inoculating all of Africa against easily preventable diseases, saving millions of lives a year. That's great. We live in really interesting times. Really interesting times. And then there's Ashley Madison. I'm not going to say anything about that. Somebody wrote me, though. I want to clarify this, because this could be important. And said, you know, you can, as a prank, sign somebody up for Ashley Madison. They don't verify it. So somebody could be in that database because their buddy was pranking them. Just a word of warning. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I had an LG G4 to answer the chat room and gave it away, underwhelmed by it. Underwhelmed by it. You know what? The best, I'm more and more convinced the best phone out there right now is the Galaxy Note 4. I should let you play with it, Mrs. Schaffer. Although no new iPhone is coming, and I know you're... you're an Android person, right?
I'm an Android person currently, but I'm about to jump ship because of battery life. It's all about the battery life.
It's all about the battery life.
And it seems like those iPhones get a lot more juice.
You know, it really varies, because I thought they got... I agree with you, but then I see people who complain about their battery life, so I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with how you use it.
Well, I do use it a lot, but... They need to make one that I can use a lot and still
and have battery. I agree.
If I leave my house at 7 in the morning, by the time I get to work at 8 o'clock,
I
shouldn't be at 75%.
No. I'm at 59%. That's why it's plugged in. on the other hand, it charges fat, you know, all the way up in less than an hour. So I don't know.
Which phone is it? It's like a Moto something or Motorola that charges really fast. Really fast?
Many of these now have what they call quick charge.
Oh, okay.
And that means they charge two or three times faster than the iPhone and the other phones. Camera in the Note is amazing. Amazing. I love it. I love it.
But you just got the Note 5?
This is the Note 5, yes.
But the Note 4 you think is the best
one? No, Note 5 is the best phone
out
there.
Note 5.
Don't forget the Note 4. That's last year's phone. Last year's phone.
Mine is so 2 years ago.
Anything will be improved. And that's time to get a new iPhone. That's what they do every other year. Get a new one.
Well, mine's that HTC One.
Yeah.
The original.
Yeah. It's time for a new one, a new phone, a new one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer. You've lined up the calls, you've groomed them, you've plastered their cowlicks down and powdered their noses, and they are ready for their national radio appearance.
God, I hope so.
To whom shall I speak?
How about Richard in West L.A.? He has photos on a regular camera, and he wants to know if there's a way to transfer them to his smartphone.
But of course, I can take that call. Hello, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Actually, I started to do it. And I saw the blank frames on the phone. It's on an iPhone, by the way. And no pictures. And then I tried to find the pictures somewhere on the phone, and I couldn't.
How were you transferring them over? What was the methodology?
Wi-Fi.
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 No, Wi-Fi. I have a friend in the tech business who insists on pronouncing it Wi-Fi, and I think it's just an affectation. I can't figure out why. Wi-Fi. So you have a method for Wi-Fi picture transference from camera to phone. Do you have a Sony camera?
No, it's a Leica.
Leica.
It's a point and shoot, but a pretty good
Leica. Nice. Any Leica is a pretty good Leica.
Yeah.
So it does it have? It has Wi-Fi in the Leica.
Yeah.
And you turn the Leica onto Wi-Fi. And then your phone finds the Leica and it copies the pictures over.
Theoretically, but...
Does it have a special Leica app on the phone?
Gosh, I don't remember. I don't have it with me, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I do that with my Sony. The nice thing with if you have an NFC-enabled phone, you just tap the phone to the Sony and they go, oh, yeah, you want to send the photos over, and you can send the photos over, and then they're on the phone. But that requires the Sony Play Memories app. I would guess it would require a special Leica app, but I don't know.
Well, theoretically, the pictures were sent because, you know, those black frames that they have in the pictures sort of appear?
Well, that's like it's getting ready.
But then where do they go?
Something will be here, but I don't think they made it or you would see an image.
Clearly. That's why I called you.
Yeah. First of all, look in the Leica app. Because I'm not sure, I don't have a Leica, but I'm just teasing you. Actually, I have a Leica lens. It's the best lens I've ever owned. The Leica, some of these apps, I don't know if the Leica app does it, but some of these apps don't put the phone in the regular photo gallery on the camera, the pictures on the regular photo gallery on the phone. They keep them in there to themselves, to their app, and then you can transfer them over. Some of them just copy them to the photo roll. If you can mount your phone on a computer, which you often can do, it's an Android device?
Yes.
Yeah. So on a Mac, you need a program, Android File Transfer, but on Windows, you just need the drivers, and it'll mount, and you can see the drive. And you should look in the folder. It usually is a folder that says Photos, and inside that, or sometimes it says Camera Roll, and inside that, there'll be a folder called DCIM, and that's usually where the photos live. So you could browse around, but my guess is they didn't get over there. That's why you only see the frame.
Right, right.
Are you shooting RAW or JPEG?
I don't know.
That could also be an issue. If it's a format on the Leica that the phone doesn't understand, it might say, well, I got something, but I can't display it.
That may well be the case then, yeah.
Yeah, because, but again, that's on the Sony side. The Sony Play Memories app knows Sony's RAW file format and translates it into JPEG. All cameras, I'm sure the Leica does too, have a little sidecar JPEG even when you shoot RAW, because that's what you're seeing in the viewfinder is the JPEG. Mm-hmm. So that's sometimes maybe the only thing that the phone can display, but it usually has something. So it's a few different things. I would look and see. I think you have to have a Leica app. There's some app that's getting the photos. If it's not a Leica app, then it could well be it's a format the phone doesn't understand.
I see. Okay, well, thanks very much.
You're welcome. It's kind of complicated, isn't it? But it's a nice feature. In fact, it's one of the reasons I use an Android device. The iPhone will do it, but you have to launch the Sony Play Memories app on the iPhone, put your camera into transfer mode. There's a lot of manual stuff. When you have NFC, you can just tap it, and the phone goes, oh, I see you have a camera, and launches the Play Memories app, and the camera says, oh, I see you have a phone. Let me copy some stuff over. And you can choose everything you took today, individual photos. It's really nice. You can even control the camera from the phone. A lot of people do that. They'll put a camera on a tripod somewhere and then use the phone as a viewfinder and say, take that picture. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on with the Leica, but I would guess it's something like that. Be my guess. 8888 Ask Leo. Robert, Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Leo. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Here's the situation. On my PC, my burner, my drive, when I use it, I sometimes leave the door open. And when I shut it down, the door stays open. It doesn't close. I'm just curious. Is there a tweak or something like that?
That would close the door if you forget to.
I don't know. It's just because I remember a while ago, one of my old PCs, it'll close the door when I shut down the PC.
Yeah, that's so, an interesting thing. I don't know. Maybe somebody in the chat room does. Windows, I take it.
Windows 7.
And the way it would have to work is you'd have to have a program that was notified by the computer, hey, I'm shutting down now. It'd probably be in the operating system, some sort of extension in the operating system, and it says, I'm shutting down now. And the program goes, oh, let's check. Is the drawer open? Oh, it's open. Close the drawer.
Right. You would think the machine would automatically close everything.
Well, that's another way to do it. In fact, I bet you that's exactly what's happened on your old machine, is that's just some sort of mechanical trigger.
Right.
If you, of course, before the machine's completely off, if you just tap, you know, push the door a little bit, it'll go, oh, what? And it'll go suck itself
yeah,
back.
Yeah, right.
But you got to remember to do that.
Don't.
Yeah, if you forget to do that, now you have a nice little cup holder. No, you don't put your cup in there because that'd break it. You can. It's not forcing it closed. You can manually push it in, but it's not. No, it doesn't feel right. It feels like you're stripping the gears or something.
Now I try to go online and look at some, you know, deal to where one was called closed tray, but it's something you create into the registry, into the menu of the drive. And then, of course, you got to input some sort of a command for it to work.
Yeah.
That's I don't want to do that. I want to just, so the machine.
I would guess that's a hardware-specific feature. That's exactly right. If you're going to do it in software, then you have to have something running that's waiting to be notified by Windows that it's shutting down, and then that thing can go out and close the drawer. I'll tell you what, chat room, listeners, assignment for you for this show. Let me know, 8888. Ask Leo. By the way, I've been checking. There is a Leica image shuttle program that does exactly that. I suspect that's what he's using. And I'll have to take a look and see if it copies it in all formats. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And it looks like they might not be updating this program as much as they ought to. Seems like the current Android update 5.1 is causing connection issues. But that's kind of, I'll show you what, it's a very nice feature. And you can do it on an iPhone. The problem with the iPhone is even though it has NFC, a late model iPhone has NFC, Apple has dragooned the NFC, so it will only do Apple Pay. It won't do anything else. Come on, Apple. Really. This is a very useful feature of NFC. You've probably seen this, like some speaker systems, you just tap. Or in the car, you just tap and it does, and it automatically cues something in the phone to launch an app. You could enable that, Apple. I don't think it's the end of the world. I really don't. So let's see here how this works. I've got some pictures here. I have a... hello, did you go to sleep? Oh, this shifted it over. Copy to... Let's see, what do I... Do I have to... Maybe I don't even have to do anything in the menu. I can't remember. I think if I just tap the NFC right here... Oh, it went boodaloo, boom, boom, diddaloom. And then smart remote embedded, play memories, Wi-Fi stand... Oh, I've never used it on this phone. Yes, I agree, and I proceed. Maybe I have to. No, I don't care. Yes, I'll say that. Stupid survey. And now, yeah. Says searching for touch shooting device. The two phones are talking. And in a moment, it will give me an option on what to copy over. Do you want to copy certain images, individual images? So all Android devices have the NFC enabled to do this particular thing. Oops, disconnected. Maybe because I went through that. It does see the phone. Let's try it again. Ba-da-doom. Ba-da-dum.
Well, there are some Android devices that don't have NFC.
But, like the OnePlus 2 doesn't have NFC, and that is a problem. Internet may not be available. I don't care. This is Samsung getting in the way. Because it says, oh, you just turned off the internet. Yeah, because I want to talk to my phone, you nitwit. Oh. It's funny. I know I did this on the S6. This should work. Let's do it one more time. I've never used Play Memories on this. Operate smartphone. See, now it says you could just join this here. As usual with a demo, it is never works when you want it to work. Play, Sony Play. Memories. Play Memories. Connect up to me. Play. Maybe I should just not handle it so much. Play Memories. Yeah, see, your device, and that weren't made, but tap OK. Oh, you know what? It's that smart network switch. I got to turn that thing off. Now it's copying. Oh, now it's in the take a picture mode. That's not what I wanted. It's doing a smart remote thing. Oh, well. That's one possibility, not the one I wanted. Let me turn off that silly smart wife Wi-Fi thing. I don't like that anyway. We're going to talk about Ring doorbells. I installed one in my house, and I am so happy with it. I can actually show you a recent Ring because I know the neighbor kid came by this morning. Love the neighbor kid, but he's a little over. You know, I think he's 11. Michael is almost 13. Sometimes Michael doesn't really want to play with him. So I think the neighbor kid came over and rang the doorbell. Now, Michael ignored it, but I could hear it in the other room. And I can use my Ring. In fact, I could use it from here. Here, we'll show you. And I can say, go away. Or Michael's, there you, wait a minute. That's the mailman or mail lady. She rang the doorbell. She ran as fast as she could, but she left a box there. See, that's nice when the boxes come. This is my Ring video doorbell. This is the coolest thing ever. This is the app, by the way, that lets you look at what's going on. And I have this on all of my phones. So when the doorbell rings, maybe this is our neighbor. Let's see. So I'll show you how this works. If you have a wired doorbell, even if you don't, because they have a battery in the Ring video doorbell. Oh, yeah, there he is. There's Pierce. See, now when he rings a doorbell, and it's live, this is a recording, I can press accept, and I can talk to him. See, there he is, little Pierce. This is the Ring video doorbell. Now, I'm not a handyman, but boy, this was easy to install. Because they give you everything you need. Screwdriver, level, even a drill bit. Of course, the mollies that you need if you're going into the wall. A screwdriver head, all of that stuff. Plus this proprietary screwdriver head, which attaches this to the frame. And the reason for that is, if you don't have a wire, you can use the battery. Got a lithium ion battery that'll keep it going for a year. So you can, every year, once a year, you use the special screwdriver to attach it, plug in a USB cable, you charge it up, and then you got another year of the Ring video doorbell. So here's the deal. This has got a camera, wide-angle camera. It's also a motion sensor. So you will know when somebody's ringing your doorbell anywhere in the world because it will not only ring your doorbell in your house, but on your phone or your tablet, Android or iOS. You can speak to somebody from anyone in the world. So when somebody rings my doorbell, I can press the accept button and I can talk to them. And I can say, oh, just leave the box there, or I'm sorry, Michael can't play today, or whatever. It's so cool. The motion detector is great too because, of course, people will ring your chimes, but even if not, you can see what's going on outside your door, and you can set up the motion detection to be as sensitive as you want. I actually had it set too sensitively. Everybody going by the street would set this off, so I turned it down. And now whenever I see motion, I know there's somebody at my front door. It's really cool. You can see when people come and go. You can keep track of what's going on. And, you know, you reduce – it's really security because – most home burglaries occur when you're not home, obviously, in the middle of the day. And almost always, about 95% of them in the middle of the day, almost always they ring the doorbell first. So you'll be able to say, I'm here, or just have a record of it and send that off to the police. It is awesome. The Ring video doorbell. Now, we've got $10 off for you if you go to ring.com/tech guy. I'm a big fan of this. They just got a big round of investment from Richard Branson. Of all people, somebody showed him. Somebody was visiting Branson's house, and his Ring rang, and he showed Branson the Ring video doorbell. And Branson said, "I have to invest in this. This is awesome." Isn't that? I just love that story. Ring.com/tech guy. The best camera, the best software, the best interface. I've tried them all. This is the one you want. It's kind of like caller ID for your house. Ring.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Virginia is in Monterey Park, California. Our next caller. Hi, Virginia.
Hi, Leo. I bought an ASUS notebook PC. Do you think I did the right thing? I can always take it back.
Yeah, I like ASUS a lot. Which one did you get?
Let's see.
Do you like it? That's more important than whether I like it.
I haven't hooked it up yet.
Because you're worried that you bought the wrong thing. Did you go into a store and some guy in a plaid suit say, "Come here, lady, let me show you something great. It's an Asus. Asus is great. You're going to love it." And force you to buy it?
He didn't force me, but he said it was very good.
He talked you into it.
Oh, it says X551M. Is that
okay? Yeah, that's it. So, I think you're right to say, well, I don't know this guy from Adam, and maybe he got a commission for the sale, and so forth and so on. But these are nice. Asus is not a very well known name. They're known among geeks, people like me, because they made great motherboards for a long time. A lot of us used Asus motherboards. They're a Taiwanese company, and they make pretty credible hardware. This is a 15-inch laptop. It looks pretty nice. What are you going to use it for?
Oh, for email and information and whatever.
Well, are you happy with the price you got it for?
Yes, it was only $200.
Holy camoly.
Yeah.
And it's running Windows 8, probably.
I have no idea.
Yeah, when you open it up, you'll get an opportunity to upgrade it to Windows 10. You can go ahead and do that. That's a heck of a good price. Oh. And really, the only you will know if it's adequate to your needs. You'll have to look at the screen. Type on the keyboard, use the trackpad. Notebooks are always a compromise in one dimension or another, you know, because they have to be compact and portable and all that. So maybe they squinched the keyboard more than you like. Maybe they didn't. Maybe the screen, it's a big screen for a notebook, but it's small for a desktop. It's only 15 inches. So maybe that's okay for you and maybe not. Was portability something you needed?
No, not really. It'll just stay here. I don't think I want to take it anywhere.
I think there's nothing wrong with it. It's a nice computer. I was saying a little earlier on that I don't really think Windows is the right thing if all you want to do is just send email and surf the web, because Windows is a full-blown operating system. It's designed to do anything its user wants to do, from launching rocket ships to performing heart surgery and everything in between. And, you know, not everyone needs that capability. I'm guessing you probably don't.
No.
if you're comfortable, have you used Windows computers before?
No. I had an old compact laptop, but it wasn't ever any good. Somebody gave it.
Yeah, so I think you could probably use this fine. It is more complex than you need. You got a deal, and I'm not sure if that's the deal on this is because it was refurbed or used in some way. Was it brand new?
No, they said it was brand new.
Wow, it's a great deal. I just feel like you'd probably do better with a similarly priced Chromebook. In fact, Asus makes a very nice one. Same company, different operating system.
Oh.
And the reason is that is much simpler and much more secure, much less prone to viruses. And you don't have to worry about updates. They do them all for you automatically. And it just is a lot easier for most people.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So I don't want to send you back to the store, but if you want something a little simpler, more reliable, and really what's most important, I think, more secure, then you might bring it back and say, you know, I'd like a Chromebook instead. And here's what I want you to do, Virginia, before you take it home, is say, and I'd like to try the keyboard, the trackpad, the screen, and make sure I'm comfortable with it before I take it home.
Because
you want to be able to use it. It needs to be easy for you to use. And those are the things you interface with. Speed, amount of storage, all that stuff doesn't really matter to you. And by the way, the Chromebooks are less expensive generally. If you only got this for $200, that's an amazing price. The Chromebook might even be a little bit more expensive, but not much. They're around. Asus Chromebooks are between $200 and $250.
Oh, is that all?
I think you'd be very comfortable with a Chromebook, and boy, it'd sure be a lot easier for you to use. I think you're still going to have. I mean, this you're going to still sit down and say, well, scratch your head a little bit, but it'd be easier to get up and running. I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
So there you go. But nothing wrong with Asus. In fact, I'd even recommend an Asus Chromebook. They're very good.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I use all the time is an Asus Chromebook, and I like it a lot.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
but you're far advanced than I am.
Well, and that's the thing is I do use other computers, much more complicated computers, but I'm a geek. And I want to do other things. You know, I want to do computer programming. I want to do photo editing, video editing. You know, it's not just for me. It's not just visiting Facebook and sending email.
Well, I wish I was like you, but I'm
no,
not.
No, you don't. Please. You just open a can of worms with that one. It's not. All it is trouble, let me tell you. That's why I sit here all day answering phone calls. It's just trouble. But I think you'd be much happier. So why don't you give that a try?
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling, Virginia. I appreciate it. It's funny. We were just talking about this at the beginning of the show. It's why schools are flocking to Chromebooks. I think it's all most people need. Now, there a lot of you I know are, but I'm manly, and I even if you're a woman, I'm manly, I'm geekly, and I can use a fancy computer, but you don't probably need a fancy computer, really. In most cases, in fact, I'll be honest with you, pretty much everything I want to do, I can do on a Chromebook. Just because I've been doing this for so long, I kind of have a natural desire to get myself in trouble. And so then I need a full computer for that. Ron in Hayden, Colorado, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for being there.
Thank you.
I have got some information regarding what you're talking about yesterday with malware. It's between Firefox and Internet Explorer. I could get Twit TV. This is on a new Lenovo Windows 10 machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so with IE, I could get on the Twit with no problem.
Yeah.
I use Firefox, and I get a page that had some links on it, like Adobe Flash Player, Watch Twit TV,
right.
Live, or Install.
Yeah.
And then I kept getting some other ones. When I went into Firefox, CenturyLink Survey.
No, don't start doing that stuff.
Oh, no. Shop Better Homes.
Stop.
Install Java.
You're killing me. So, let me explain.
The worst one.
What?
Dear Twit List Visitor.
Uh-huh.
Congratulations, Twit Visitor. Complete the short survey.
That's not my page.
About Twit and select your exclusive gift.
That is
of up to $131.32.
That's terrible.
Cash value.
That's terrible. That's not from my page. Did you go to twit.tv?
Yeah.
And you got all that stuff?
I got that when I went through Firefox.
Well, maybe there's something in your sounds like you got something in your Firefox.
Well, I've tried everything, and I finally uninstalled it.
So I think the initial issue came down to not having Flash. And the nice thing on Windows 10 is I think now that Windows 10, boy, I have to check, IE has Flash built in, much as Chrome does now. I'll have to check. But if you got there in Firefox and you didn't have Flash, it would ask you to install Flash. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk about what happened there. So what I suspect is that the Firefox had some sort of a malware and a browser hijacker object. Looking at the page you visited, this does not come from my page. Trust me, this is... We definitely don't do surveys or anything like that. So you had something installed in there on your system or in the Firefox. It was noting the page you were going to. You could probably have gone to google.com and it would say, hey, Google viewer, here's a survey. I think that the issue is Flash. If you want to watch our show live on a computer, if you go to the live button, Ustream plays back in Ustream and BitGravity play back in Flash. Now, if you go on a device that we know doesn't have Flash, like an Android or iOS device, it will automatically load an HLS non-Flash stream, but it will prefer Flash. We're kind of beholden to our providers, Ustream and BitGravity. We're going to add Twitch to this soon. But they use Flash, and now, but they're also smart enough, Ustream, that if they see you on iOS, they'll provide you with a better stream, a non-Flash stream. So what happened is, if you go there in your IE on Windows 10, this is Windows 10 only, IE has Flash in it, and it will load and play fine because it's in there, just like Chrome. But at Firefox, you have to install the Flash plugin on your operating system. My suspicion is you attempted to do that, but you didn't get it from Adobe. You got it from some malware site. And by installing that, you now have something else. And that's a cause for concern. It is possible that it was merely a browser hijacker object that was specific to Firefox. Since you don't see it anywhere else, I'm hoping that's the case, and uninstalling Firefox took care of it, right? So that sounds like that's the best thing. Firefox is not the problem. The problem is something got on your system, and it probably was an extension for Firefox. Let me see real quickly. I'm going to run Windows 10 here. Yeah, I'm worried. Apparently it didn't infect IE or Edge, because he only sees it on Firefox. But you're right. That is the biggest cause for concern. So let me suspend this for a moment. That is the biggest cause for concern. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel terrible, but I have to say it's not me. It isn't me. Our caller went to my podcast website, twit.tv. I presume press the live button. Those live streams require Flash. If you're using Internet Explorer or using Edge, which I think people probably think is Internet Explorer on Windows 10 because it has the same logo, kind of, an E, it'll play fine without because the Flash is built in. But if you go there on Firefox or a browser that doesn't have Flash built in, you'll need Flash to add the Flash extension. And I think that's what you realized, Ron. My fear is that you didn't get it from Adobe. So very important. So very important. When you're downloading software, to be extremely cautious. Bad guys, in order to get on your system, they have to get you to run a program. Now, sometimes the system has flaws in it that let them run the program remotely. Flash, in fact, has had such flaws. So has Shockwave. Flash, if you get a earlier unpatched, unfixed version of Flash, it's possible for a bad guy to post on a website a malformed video or animation that the Flash player will run, and then, because the Flash player has flaws in it, will actually execute code in what you thought was just a movie and infect your system. Wow, that's convoluted. But that's why we patch. We patch everything that goes on the internet whenever there's an update, whether it's Windows, whether it's your browser, whether it's Flash, Shockwave, Adobe Reader. Those things must be patched regularly. You never want to use an old version. And it's one of the reasons a lot of companies, like Apple, no longer ships their computer with Flash. They don't want you to use Flash. And Microsoft has done, as Google has done, which I think is the smart thing to do, embed Flash into the browser, and the browser will do the job of keeping it up to date. So you don't, in fact, sometimes you'll find if you haven't kept your Chrome up to date and you go to a site that wants to play video through Flash, it'll say, I can't. Your Flash player is out of date and I don't dare use it. That, which is a great security feature, a little annoying. Now, if you say, oh, well, I'm going to Google Flash and get it, and maybe you go to a site that's not adobe.com. That's who makes Flash. Always get software from the original creator, never from a third party. Download.com, they put stuff in there, they add extra stuff. And it could be worse. You could go to another site that's really malicious stuff. And I think that's probably what happened. You said, well, Firefox won't play Leo's video, so I'm going to go to a site and get something that will. Unfortunately, it wasn't Adobe.com. The makers of Flash, it was somebody else. And in the process of installing Flash, you installed other stuff as well. And that's why you're getting a survey on my site. Because that's not normal. That's not right. So my suggestion is, I think uninstalling Firefox might have fixed this. Maybe this, some malware just attaches itself to the browser. That would be good if it was just, you know, like a Firefox exploit that didn't affect Internet Explorer or Edge. Let's hope so. You uninstalled Firefox, you're probably okay. But I'd be very cautious. I'd worry. Because that sounds like I know you had malware on there. You wouldn't have seen that survey otherwise. We do not pop up surveys and offer you $132.43 for taking that survey. That does not happen. There shouldn't be any pop-ups at all. Weird. Weird. I'm very sorry that that happened to you. And this is a problem for a lot of sites because, well, for instance, last week it turned out that Yahoo, you know, because they have an ad service, right? And they have an automated ad service. Yahoo was serving malware in the ad. Somebody, some bad guy, clever bad guy, bought ads. There's no human intervention here. They bought ads. It was a flash ad. They took advantage of that. And those ads were malicious. And if you hadn't patched your flash, you weren't in a patched operating system, and you saw that ad, if you went to a page with that ad, and these could be very reliable pages, lots of pages use Yahoo ads, you would have been infected. Whoa. It sounds like it's Yahoo's fault. And maybe it is. Maybe these automated ad systems aren't a great idea. But you can't really blame Yahoo. Their system was gamed. But this is why flash is a problem. And it's always a risk to Google something and follow that first link. That may not be the link. You want to make sure you're getting all your plugins, especially from the original author. In this case, Adobe, adobe.com. Hey, we'll have more for you in just a second. Our next call is coming to us from Florida. Joe has an old Apple IV that just can't play videos. Is it the phone? Is it the bandwidth? We'll do some diagnostics when we come back. But first, let's talk about backup, specifically online backup. It's so important to back up your data. You know, those hard drives, everything fails. Phones fail, you lose them, they break, hard drives fail. If you don't have a good backup, you're out of luck. Anything that you've got on that computer is gone. And if you're a business, that could be your business gone. So you're backing up, right? Well, but are you backing up enough? Are you backing up right next to the computer? What if there's a fire, a flood? What if burglars break in and steal all your stuff? Do you have a backup to the backup? That's what Carbonite does. It's online backup, so they can't get to it. Fire can't destroy it. Your data is safe up there on the Carbonite servers. It's a little vacation for your data. They're climate-controlled, power-conditioned. Very nice place for your data to stay until you need it back. I love Carbonite. You pay once a year or once every 2 or 3 years. You don't have to think about it after that. No matter how much data, just doing it automatically, continuously, whenever you're online. If you're a business or an individual, if you're on a PC or a Mac, you've got to get Carbonite. Go to Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, for the free trial. That way you'll get 2 months free when you buy. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Joe, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
Going good.
I am really having an annoying problem with this doggone thing, this old i4.
Okay.
And everything I watch, I guess YouTube, everything I go, it always buffers, pauses, everything I do, every single thing does. What's going on?
Dang you, Internet. The promise of the Internet is so great, but sometimes the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, or the bandwidth is weak in some cases. Could be the phone. If a friend or family member has a more recent phone on the same network and they're not buffering, could be the phone, because older hardware has to work harder to play this newer high quality video. But more likely it's your bandwidth. Who's your carrier?
Sprint.
Sprint. And do you notice how many bars you have when you're doing that?
It happens at 2, and it happens at
5,
4,
huh?
I think.
But it doesn't. Does it happen? Now, here's the real question: does it happen when you're at home on Wi-Fi?
Or yes,
it does, because the Wi-Fi should be fast enough. The home internet should be fast enough. But I
wait a minute. No, wait a minute. I haven't tried it on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, see,
I'm just picking it up right off the Sprint tower.
Yeah, take your phone home and see if it works on the Wi-Fi, because that'll eliminate the phone as being the problem. I think it is almost certainly Sprint. Sprint made a very bad choice some years ago. When LTE was coming in, this new fourth generation high-speed networks, Sprint said, we're not going to use LTE. We're going to use something called WiMAX. It's the latest, greatest, fastest thing. Turned out to be a bomb. And Sprint has realized that, and they're slowly converting away. They may not have converted away in your area. If you don't see LTE, actually, is the 4 even capable of LTE? That's another question. I have to think. Sprint just was, you know, major investment in Sprint by a Japanese company called SoftBank. They say that they are going to convert all of Sprint's, get rid of all of that WiMAX, convert to the latest fourth generation technology, LTE. That will make a big difference. But first, let me check. You know what? You don't have LTE on your iPhone 4. So that's the problem. You're using a 3G or even less, a 2G network, which is considerably slower. A new phone would probably help. But the first thing you should do is check with Sprint in your area. Make sure they support LTE now in your area. So that's part of the problem is that even the 4S, it wasn't until the iPhone 5 that Apple decided to support LTE. And LTE makes a huge difference in performance. I look at my LTE phone on T-Mobile here, which is the fastest network in our area, and I'm getting typically faster speeds than in my house, 40 megabits down, 20 megabits up. I don't get that on Sprint here because Sprint's network, as I said, is a laggard. But so you should check with your local authorities, with Sprint in your area, see what they've got. If they have LTE, you need to get a new phone to get all that bandwidth. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by our good buddies. Hello, good buddy, breaker, breaker, well died. Our good buddies at Epson, makers of that great workforce printer we're talking about, powered by Precision Core. You know, the radio ads, I don't get to really tell you what Precision Core is. But they said on the podcast, you're talking to a techie audience, you can tell them about it. Precision Core was developed for industrial printers, and it's a technology they've now migrated into the Epson Workforce series. It's kind of mind-boggling. 40 million dots per second, inkjet dots per second, and they're very precise. So it's just the right of micro, these are micro droplets of ink. So you get high-quality, high-speed printing. You don't get too much ink. You don't get bleed. It's just crisp, clear text, really nice color. And it's the fastest inkjet printer you've ever seen. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I love it. I upgraded. I actually had the old Workforce. I upgraded to the new Workforce. And the page just basically is a page at a time. It goes, zzz, zzz. You don't even hear it painting the pages. It goes, zzz. And by the way, cost per page, about half of a color laser printer. You also save money because there's no warm-up time. They're energy efficient, and you can print on not just paper, but labels, all sorts of media. Really is a great solution for your small business, your home office. We got two of them. I have one at home and one here in Lisa's office because we just love them so much. The new Epson Workforce printers powered by Precision Core. They're ink. They're not laser toner, but they're more efficient, half the cost of a color laser printer. And the speed will blow your mind. It's the next generation of inkjet performance. Epson just keeps knocking it out of the park. Call Epson.com today or visit Epson.com. Find out what the new Workforce printers can do for you and your business. E-P-S-O-N. Just no question in my mind. This is the printer for you. E-P-S-O-N.com. Epson.com. Epson is built to perform. Let me see what the Sprint... The Sprint WiMAX. Yeah, they're going to shutter all WiMAX by November 6th. So that's good news. Presumably, they will put LTE everywhere that WiMAX was. So that will make a big difference, too. I don't even know if the iPhone 4 supports WiMAX. WiMAX was a horrific flop. Devices on its WiMAX, a 3G network, will work on 3G once WiMAX is... Now, I wonder... Let's see. iPhone 4, WiMAX, Sprint. Let's see if the iPhone... I bet the iPhone 4 didn't do 4G either. Uh, bet it doesn't. No, it doesn't. So you're going to get whatever 3G stuff. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. The website, you should know that. In fact, if there's one thing to write down, it's that website. Because everything else we talk about is put there so you can check after the fact. So you don't have to write anything down as you're listening. That's techguylabs.com. Just memorize that. Commit that to memory. Tech guy, that's me. The labs, I'm there in my lab coat with the Bunsen burners and the beakers, .com. Techguylabs.com. We put the audio and the video there after the fact. There's a comment section, and I encourage you, if you have a thought or a better idea, to put those in the comments. And it's all free. There's no sign up. You just walk in. We leave the door wide open. Anybody, please come visit techguylabs.com. 7x24. The photo guy coming up, Chris Marquardt, in about half an hour. And I think it's, do I have time to take a picture of sour stuff? I think I missed the boat again on this one. He's going to do an assignment review. Pictures of sour, whatever that means. We'll find out. Josh on the line from Sun City, California. Hey, Josh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. Hi, Leo.
Hey.
I'm frustrated with Apple.
Yeah, you know, technology can be frustrating. What exactly is happening?
I have an 11-year-old son, yep. And I would like him to stop getting all of my email on his tablet.
Yes, you would.
So I thought it'd be neat, and the Apple genius said I should set up the family share for him.
Yes, family share is awesome.
That way, he can, went through
that way he'll see, he can listen to the music you buy, he can watch the movies you buy on your account without actually accessing your account.
Right. So I created the, I went through and I created the Apple ID for a child.
Yes.
But I get a statement saying that I only have a debit card and that I need, if, that I, to prove that I am an adult.
Right.
I need to enter a credit card.
Right. They're not going to use that for, it's confusing because it implies that, well, you have to send, you have to, you're going to buy something. But this is actually a side effect of the law, federal law called the Child Online Privacy and Protection Act, or COPPA.
Mm-hmm.
Kid under 13 has to have parental consent. Now, companies, websites can decide how they want to prove that that's an adult giving parental consent. But Apple's decided that by using the security code, the CVV, on the back of a credit card, you prove that you have that credit card. And, of course, you couldn't have a credit card if you were under 13.
Right.
So that's their method. It says after you create the ID with a credit card, you can change the payment method back to a debit card.
So I have to apply for a credit card.
You don't have a credit card?
No, I'm an adult. I pay cash.
How do I know you're a grown-up then? My gosh, you could be a deep-voiced 12-year-old. Yeah, that's
exactly.
A good... There's a loophole, isn't it? What if you don't have a credit card?
Right.
Well, I don't know. How could you be an American and not have a credit card? You pay
I'm
your bills with cash? Are you insane? You know, that is a little bit of an assumption on Apple's part. And I'm just looking at their, you know, the kid ID that they talk about on the Apple support mm-hmm. page. And, yeah, before you begin, make sure you're using a credit card as your – well, how do you buy stuff on the iTunes store? Use a debit card.
I use my Visa debit card. And that's how I use Apple Pay, my Visa debit card.
Got it. It says if the card on file is a debit card or another payment method, you'll be asked to provide a credit card before you can continue. That's, you know what? I would call Apple support and say, come on, there's got to be a loophole here.
I did, and for an hour and a half I was on the phone, and then they actually asked me to go find a cellular network to get off my Wi-Fi, and so I drove about 10, 15 minutes down the road.
What?
And it didn't work. And then Apple called me back. I went through three operators and upper tech support.
Holy cow.
And you have to be an adult to use it. And the only way you can prove that you're an adult is if you are a good American with a credit card.
Wow. Well, I'd be a little frustrated, too. That's it. You know, and I should say that this is not part of the COPPA law. This is the COPPA law only says that the site has to somehow, you know, prove you're an adult. I would think that Apple would have some system where you could send them a copy of your driver's license or something. Because not everybody, guess what, Apple, has a credit card.
Right.
That is just weird.
Tech support was shocked that they had to go through this, and then he had to go to his managers to figure out the whole thing. It's just, it's crazy.
Here's what I would do. I mean, if you want to help everybody in future, write to Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, because Tim has a very large department called the Office of the Chief Executive that is there to answer email and letters be better to the CEO. And they're very good about handling that. And I think it should be brought to Tim Cook's attention because, you know what? He's a sensitive guy. I think he really does want to do the right thing and say, you know, not every parent has a credit card. You allow the use of debit cards for Apple accounts. That's what I use. I would like to use family sharing. I would like for you to have an alternative verification method so that I can get my kid on a family sharing account. That seems completely legitimate, and you know, I bet you anything that you will get a response from Tim Cook's team. You might even get a response from Tim himself.
Thank you. That's a great idea.
Yeah, Tim Cook, Apple Computer, One Infinite Loop, Cupertino, California. I don't know what the zip code is.
I'll look it up.
Okay. You know, I'm glad you brought this up. That is a interesting loophole, and I think it is really unfair of them to assume that everybody has a credit card. And you certainly shouldn't have to get a credit card just so you can sign your kid up. You might even want to, if you have more than a few hundred Twitter followers, you might even want to tweet at Tim Cook and let him know. This is a very interesting question. Wonder why they don't accept debit cards. Is it because, I don't know, could a kid have a debit card? I don't think so. They sound like they do have some sort of weird backup verification system that involves the cell phone. I think they could do better. Come on, folks. This is why we invented technology, not to make life more bureaucratic. I bet you anything Tim Cook would respond to that. Connor in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Connor.
Hi there. I just recently bought a Seagate external hard drive, 1 terabyte, and it's a backup plus slim model.
Good.
And it came with its own software. I have a pretty good computer experience, but I don't have much knowledge with backing up to an external hard drive. And
your all operating systems come with a backup program, which I don't recommend. Because what almost all the operating system backup programs do is make a blob that you can't really look into. I like copying. And the best way to do it if you have an external drive is synchronization. So that, because they're folders you want to make sure you have a copy of on your internal drive. You want to have them be identical on the external drive. So I think using a synchronization program to sync the internal to the external is a better way to backup, because you can look at the internal, you can see it. Are you on a Mac or a PC?
Well, that would be my second question. Is I actually own a PC and a Mac.
Okay.
And I've used PCs for years, and I just recently bought a Mac about a year ago, a 27-inch iMac, and I'm very, very happy with what Mac has done.
All right, I got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Connor, I'll put in the show notes, there's different programs for Windows and Mac. On the Mac, I recommend a program called ChronoSync that is a really nice synchronization program. In fact, it's better than anything on the PC side. On the PC side, I recommend Second Copy. Do you have chat room, a recommendation for a synchro program for Windows besides Second Copy? That's from Centered Systems. Autoback? I like a backup where I can look at it and say, oh yeah, there's my files, and open them, sample them. The last caller could buy an iTunes gift card. Really? I don't think so. The point of the whole process is to prove that you're an adult. And I guess that's why they don't use debit cards, because minors can have a debit card. Super Duper is very good for the Mac. I really like Super Duper. In fact, that's another one. Free File Sync and BVackup. We'll put these all in. I like the name BVackup. We'll put the name of these in, all of these in the on the website. GoodSync. Carbon Copy Cloner is good for the Mac. Yeah, no, Nightstar, but they understand. Yeah, no. I use my debit card as a credit card, but that's not a credit card. It's a debit card being used as a credit card. Apparently, Apple knows the difference. Does not approve. I do not approve of your futile attempt. No, all Intel has a MCPUs, but also puts core CPUs in laptops. You can get an i5, an i7. Get all of the different kinds. Always Sync. Cobian. Or you can also do it manually. But I think Sync is nice. Yes. You know, I don't have an Epson EcoTank printer, but Becky Worley did, and she liked it a lot. I think thumbs up. But I don't have one to review, so I don't know. I think the savings isn't phenomenal. Yeah, ChronoSync is a front-end rsync. So since rsync is awesomest of all, it's nice to have a front-end for that. I don't know how he does things without a credit card. Why are you asking me? I do not have a pipeline to our caller. I don't know. I think it's admirable, and I don't think Apple should require that everybody have credit cards.
You can use a debit card everywhere.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why you can't use the debit card. It's just for identifying minors.
You have to prove you're
an adult. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to put a list of synchronization programs for Windows and Mac in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Pick one. I'd like synchronization as opposed to backup, because you can see it. You can try it. You can say, look at this external drive. It has all my files on it. See, there's one. And open it and make sure they're all right. Now, admittedly, it's not a perfect solution, but at least you can spot check and get a pretty good idea you've got what you want. 8888 Ask Leo. Tony is in Ontario, California. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Leo. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm hoping that you can help me out here. I've got a Windows machine, and I listened to your show a week or two ago, and you were talking about Windows 10, and it sounded like it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I upgrade, and... Only problem is I can't seem to get Service Pack 1 loaded on my machine for Windows 7. And I've tried everything that I could find online. I ran their...
Does the Windows 10 upgrade require Service Pack 1 for Windows 7?
Yeah, it says that you have to have the most current operating system.
Oh, interesting.
Service Pack 1.
I did not know that. And when you try to install Service Pack 1 on Windows 7, what happens?
It fails every time.
Yeah.
You'll get about 10% of the install, and then it says failure reverting to previous, system. And I've tried, I ran their repair tool. I've downloaded the patch. I've done everything I can think to do.
Well, it's about, the good news is, you really need to upgrade to Windows 10 at this point, because you're running Windows 7 in an unsafe mode. Those patches are critical.
Yeah, and I've got, fortunately, I've got, where is it? The than a virus.
Any virus is not going to protect you.
No, but I've got that on there. I tried disabling that.
You think that might be why you can't? Yeah, sometimes security programs do that. The chat room's suggesting, and I agree, that you should try downloading the full service pack. This I remember now, was something that happened fairly frequently. And the trick I used, and others did, is to download the service pack in its entirety and then install it as if you're installing an upgrade from a DVD.
I did that.
And it still didn't work.
Still failed.
I do remember this issue with Windows 7 and Service Pack 1. There were issues with installing it.
It's an iBuy Power computer. I believe I got it through Newegg.
Well, let me think about this. So, you should be able to install Windows 10 and activate it even if you don't have Windows 7 installed. Chat room, help me out here. And by the way, I'll refer you to Thurrott, my Windows expert at Thurrott.com, Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com. But I'm pretty sure, can download the Windows 10 ISO from Microsoft and install it on a blank drive and then verify that you had a Windows 7. Isn't there a way to do that you had Windows 7? The other thing you could do is, you're going to want to do this anyway, back up your data. Do you have the install disks for Windows 7?
I think I have it somewhere, but I think it's in the original box in storage.
Okay, they're saying that the free Windows 10 upgrade requires the Windows be installed in place. Boy, that's annoying, isn't it? So what you could do is you could wipe the drive, install Windows, back up your data. You're going to do that anyway. Install Windows 7, fresh install, wipe the drive. Update that Windows 7. That should update. And, the problem you're having with the updating is more the stuff you did to Windows 7 before Service Pack 1 came out.
Well, the thing is, I haven't really done much to the computer. I mean, I hardly have any software on it.
Yeah,
I use it primarily for browsing, and I play one or two games.
It has to do with something. I'd be shocked if you couldn't restore the Windows 7 to the original disks and not install Service Pack 1 at that point. That's almost certainly the case. It's something that it's somehow different from the way it was when you got it.
Yeah. Obviously it must be. I just can't figure out what it is.
Yeah. I remember dimly these issues. Your hard drive's not full, right?
Oh, no, it's not even close.
Somebody suggests this is a good idea. AZ Wheels says, why not reboot into safe mode with networking? You tap the F8 key, reboot, tap the F8 key. It boots into it. Then you get a menu and choose safe mode with networking and then try the update.
Okay.
I'm like, that's a good idea. The draconian solution is to wipe it, install 7 from those disks that you're going to have to dig out of the garage. Activate it, install Service Pack 1, and then upgrade to Windows 10. But by doing that, you're going to get a cleaner install.
Okay.
And that might really make a difference anyway. I mean, I think you want to do that anyway, frankly. If you don't do that, then you're going to want to kind of restore your PC to Windows 10 and all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is, it's... doing these kinds of service pack updates, that's a major update to Windows while Windows is running, is not easy. It's non-trivial. It's like the old adage, rebuilding the airplane engine in flight. And sometimes there are problems with it.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that the best thing to do is to at least try the safe mode. And if that failing that, maybe uninstall anything you can. There's something running, and it could well be the security software. There's something getting in the way of the update. It may be that the hard drive's corrupted, in which case, bringing it back to metal, bare metal, formatting and reinstalling Windows 7 might be the only fix.
I'll give it a try.
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
I wish I had a magic wand I could wave. But, the truth is, this is nature telling you... You're very lucky to have gotten this far. To be running Windows 7 without updates past Service Pack 1 and including Service Pack 1, is a little risky. You're running out there without those updates. Those updates, all of those updates were, that have happened ever since, years worth, almost all of them patched major security flaws. So you're really much better off fixing this than just putting up with it. This is Windows telling you need to fix it. We do have some links the chat room is providing to maybe some suggestions for other fixes. Check techguylabs.com, see if there's any other ideas. But I have a feeling you're gonna have to strip it all back down, format and restore, and then go from there. 8888 Ask Leo. Don't forget that website, techguylabs.com. That's very useful and a great place to go for information and additional suggestions. Thanks to our great team tech guy in the chat room and elsewhere. Their comments are very useful. techguylabs.com. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, waiting in the wings. He's going to help us with some digital photography tips. Oh, I know what he's doing. He's going to review our assignment. Get your sour pictures ready. Here we go. But first, let me tell you how I read magazines these days. Next issue. It's kind of like Netflix for magazines. You get to pay one monthly rate and read a bunch of great magazines. And frankly, this is a much better way. You know, I guess you could buy magazines. I used to do that. You know, you buy them at the grocery store. And I'd read a little bit or I'd browse through it. But it seems like it was bad for the earth, bad for my wallet. It just didn't make a lot of sense because I wasn't reading the whole magazine. A lot of times I just want to read one article in a magazine. Next issue is a great solution for me. I've been a member for more than a year. For those of us who want great magazine content, but want it on our iPad or our iPhone or our Android device, this is so great. The Next Issue mobile app lets you tap into the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. And I mean, if you look at the list of magazines, it's all the magazines you want. There's always an article in Rolling Stone I want to read, but I don't want the whole magazine. I don't need it. With Next Issue, I've got it. The app will automatically download all your favorite magazines with or without Wi-Fi. You get to set it and control it. Read and roam with ease. If you go to nextissue.com/techguy, you can try it free for 30 days, a whole month free. And I tell you, the magazines are fabulous. Now, I may say, oh, yes, I get it for Wired, or Bloomberg Businessweek, or Fortune. But actually, I get it for Brides, Essence, More, and Self. I like to read Weddings and Working Mother Mag. No, I actually tend to read the gossip magazines, Us and People, and Entertainment Weekly, Vanity Fair. The point is, you've always got something great to read. It's just like the magazine, all the images, the layout's the same. You get hundreds of options, bonus features, and all at a much better price. Declutter your life and discover new content that fits your passions and interests. Next Issue. Go to nextissue.com/techguy, nextissue.com/techguy, and get your 30-day free trial right now. Then download the mobile app and get started building your library, exploring all those great magazines. There's always something great to read. nextissue.com/techguy. A lot less expensive than subscribing, and even much less expensive than buying them at the newsstand. Hi, Oprah. Hi, Ringo. Love it. So this is a new thing that Google does now, which I really like. They've got a couple new things in Google Photos. One is that they do Remember This Day. Turn it on. If you haven't done that yet in Photos, you have to go to the Assistant section and turn it on. And then it just randomly pulls out pictures from a day in the past. Remember This Day? And it has a little montage. But then this other thing is really cool. I don't know if you've seen this, Chris. It makes a movie out of your day.
Hi there.
Hey. So this is a movie from yesterday's screensavers that Google just made for me, and I haven't modified it in any way. It even put some cheesy music behind it.
I think. Oh wow.
Thank you. right?
Is that did that take some of your YouTube footage as well and put that together? Wow. I don't have enough stuff up on Google Pictures to have it automatically do anything. But
put everything on Google Pictures. Cool. That's what I do now. I have it scanning my Lightroom directories. So, I mean, there's no limit. So it's just uploaded. I have 30,000 photos on there now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's no limit.
So many places to put your stuff.
I know.
That's pretty awesome,
but
though.
The things they do with it is pretty cool.
What technology do they employ? Oh, my Where God. Did they buy that?
They must have so many servers on there. So my Google Photos just sit here, and then you click this. And so now there's a rediscover this day, like August 20th, 2013, or August 23rd. So it's 2 years ago. So it's just going through days and rediscovering the days, and you can save those out. I just love it. And then, so these are SLR shots that...
But they have no edits on them. So Google does all the editing on them, the right. color correction, everything for you pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, these are... I don't know why there's two of these. Maybe one's
the
JPEG,
I would say for a lot of people, that's the perfect thing. For a lot of people, that would be perfect.
Let me see. This is 42 megapixels, 43 megabytes. So that's the original.
Do you have the R7 II now?
I do.
How loud is it?
It's a beautiful sound. I've assigned one of the buttons to silence, but here's what it sounds like.
That's very soft.
No, I meant it's not doing. Here we go.
Oh, that's so much better.
It's so much better, and it's damped, so it doesn't jiggle the camera like the R did.
And that's the regular sound.
It's a nice sound. That's the regular sound, and then I press the silent button. Of course, silence degrades it a little bit. This is the silent button. Whoops. Oh, no, that's not silent. Which one's silent? Oh, I have to do that. Okay, here we go. Let me focus it. There. Took a picture.
Oh, that was really
silent. It makes no sound because it's a digital curtain.
Digital shutter. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Now
nice.
I'm getting great shots, too.
Oh, am I getting good shots?
Yeah.
I love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, that is my good buddy, Chris Marquardt. He's our photo guy. He joins us every week, talk about photography, and every month gives us an assignment. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
You have assigned us to take pictures of the word or the idea sour.
Yes, I have. Sour. And I must say, this one was a tough one. I mean, not as many people as usual have followed along with the assignment because... what would you do? Right?
I would do. I would give a lemon wedge to a baby.
Yeah, but you didn't. But it was a good idea. No, no one did. But we got some lemons and things, of course, a lemon drive in one. And I took some of the pictures that weren't as literal or that were taking it over the top. So the first one is by RedUp66 and... the title is Sour Sinking Tractor. So
that's not good. That does not sound good.
what he did is he found a tractor somewhere, and that's probably there just to play with. That's sunk into the ground with wheels kind of sticking out halfway. So it's kind of a defunct, derelict tractor there. And what he did is he made that black and white. And
I love that, by the way.
That's the fun thing. You can play with photography nowadays. You have your own dark room if you have Lightroom or Aperture or iPhoto. No, it's not. It's called Photos now. You have a digital dark room that lets you do a lot of things. For example, in this case, it's a pretty strong vignette on the outer edges. The edges are darkened down, which kind of focuses your attention towards the middle. It's certainly something sour about that, especially if you're the owner of the tractor.
If it's your tractor, yes. You know what's great? This was taken with a camera phone.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It was taken with a Samsung camera phone. And,
I love that.
If you look at the photo, there's nothing that would give that away.
No, only reason I know is I looked at the information on the Flickr, EXIF information. And boy, I mean, it's a Galaxy S5, and that just shows you how good these camera phones are.
Oh yeah, nice. And especially when you shoot at bright daylight, and those cameras never have any issues, no matter what size the sensor.
Yep.
So, second one by KGMK99, who took it over the top by combining, this is called Lemon Sauerkraut Surprise.
Oy, oy, oy.
It's two sour things in one. It's a lemon filled with a sauerkraut filled lemon, which, oh well, okay. I'm not sure I want to try that. Even though I like both, but I've never tried that combination.
That's taking it very literally.
Yeah, very, very literally. That is also not taken with a big camera. That's taken with a smaller Sony DSC compact camera.
Nice.
Yeah. Light-wise, I would probably have gone a bit closer to cut a bit off of the plate, which gives it a bit more of an interesting framing. Also with something like that, with the sauerkraut and the reflective plate and the spoon on the side, which, by the way, I like, is putting a spoon. All the food photos you do, if you put some cutlery on the plate, that looks like you were just eating it.
It's much more interesting. I mean, imagine it without the spoon.
As interest, and it gives you also a relation of the size. So this is a fairly big lemon on that plate, and you can see that by just comparing it with a spoon on the side.
Or a small spoon.
Or a very small spoon in that case. And I would probably have looked for a bit of a different light because it looks kind of flat. If you, in this kind of a shot with lots of reflective things, add light that comes in from behind, then you will get some really beautiful reflections on the wet parts of that and that make it look much, much fresher and much nicer.
I like side lighting.
Side lighting, back lighting.
Yeah.
So the third one. Okay.
Ooh,
I mean,
wow.
By MA, titled Green Snake, and it's I first I looked at it and I thought, well, that doesn't really belong here, does it? Because I'm not sure. Are snakes sour? I've never tried snakes.
It's a lemon lime snake. You can tell,
but it is the color, absolutely lime color. That's what I then realized, and of course it belongs here because it really reminds of that. Is I'm not sure, is it actually called a lemon lime snake?
But it looks like a Sprite. I mean, it's very lemon limey.
It has that color.
Yeah.
So
isn't that funny?
You could certainly imagine that tasting sour just by the color on it. And that's a really nice shot. I like the light on that. If you look how the light bounces off. There's some backlighting going on here. You can see this on the back of the snake and on the side.
Yeah, this is an example of not the front light source, but coming in from the side and the top.
And you can also tell the underside of the rock is dark, so the light is coming from behind and from the top.
And you can tell this was taken with a fancy camera, too. Was it?
Can you? It doesn't say.
Doesn't say.
Well, there's one way you can tell that at least there was a bigger sensor in use, and that is the depth of field.
Yeah.
You see it going out of focus towards the back. The focus is exactly where it needs to be in this picture. It's right on the eye of the snake, right on the head and the eye of the snake. But then the background is out of focus, which gives it a very kind of a creamy quality there and makes it easy to concentrate on the snake. Nothing else is kind of in the way. Nothing takes the attention away from the sharp parts of the image. So probably either Micro Four Thirds or maybe even a DSLR.
It's a good camera. I mean, look at the depth of field is what they call it, where how much is in focus. And while the snake's eye is in focus, the rock on which he's sitting, the front of it is not, and the background's not. Even the back of the snake goes out of focus. So that's
a pretty thin
depth of field. That's a bit of a bigger picture.
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny, that's
one of the things you get with larger sensors. You get more control over depth of field.
And that's a cheap way of making your photos look professional. Because people sense that. They don't know why.
Ooh.
Yeah, they don't know why, but they sense. Oh, there's something about this.
But you know, you see this in movies as well. Movies are typically shot on, like old film movies are shot on that same size as a DSLR.
Yeah.
So the same sensor size, the same film size. Even many of the movie cameras now have sensors that are big enough to give you that depth of field, so you're used to that kind of look when going to the movies, and that kind of that translates into it looking professional.
You're saying something that's, I think, puzzling people, because we normally think of depth of field being related to the aperture size. The smaller the hole in the camera, the wider the depth of field. A wide open lens is narrow depth of field. But you're mentioning sensors. Tell us why the sensor is important.
The depth of field has to do with the with the zoom factor, as how telephoto you're shooting or how wide angle you are, and that in turn is related to the size of the sensor. So smaller sensors, and you're shooting at 6 millimeters instead of like 50 millimeters on a DSLR, and the smaller you get there, the more depth of field you have. That's why small sensors also give you lots of things in focus, like
much better
you
focus.
Saw this on the tractor picture, for example. Yeah. On the first one, you saw that the background was fully in focus. That's because it was shot with a bit of a smaller sensor.
So that's very hard one to get of the things that shallow depth of field with a camera phone. Yes. Or even a point-and-shoot camera, because those sensors are very small.
Yes.
But
you can. If you get really close, you can get some of the background out of focus. But getting really close on this tractor would mean you'd lose half of it. So mm-hmm. kind of difficult with some of the subjects.
And that's, by the way, why it fools people when you have depth of field. They go, oh, you're a pro. Well, no, I just...
Yeah.
Chris Marquardt is at...
Basically means you can afford a bigger camera.
That's right. He's at Discover. That's me. I'm not a great photographer. I can just afford a better camera. He's at discoverthetopfloor.com. When we come back, our assignment for the next 4 weeks. I want you to participate. It's a lot of fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't like spiders and snakes. That ain't what it takes. Nice. I love it that you got a camera phone picture in there. That's so great.
And you throw me the curveball with the focal length.
No, you know what? I just wanted to make sure that people, because somebody in the chat would say, well, wait a minute, it's aperture. Why is he saying sensor? Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that...
It's right. Yeah. I could spend like 1 hour explaining that.
I know. It's complicated.
Do you want me to stay on for a minute to give the assignment?
Yeah, would you if you can?
No problem.
That way we can let you...
Oh, by the way, I will be gone for the next 2 Sundays. I will be in Donegal.
Oh, you're going to beautiful Ireland in the rain.
The beautiful Ireland to Donegal, north and west tip of Ireland. It's amazing,
that'll be great. That'll be fun.
We'll be like 10, 12 people... doing landscape and seascape photography.
Mm-hmm.
It's the light out there is just so amazing. That and the landscape.
Well, now I just want to go all over and shoot things with my new camera. It is nice. It's really nice. Very happy with it.
I envy you a bit. I mean, that is a beautiful camera with that lens. Wow.
You know, it's better than I deserve, but... I actually had a picture for Sauer.
You know?
But I
have a box.
But I don't have the rights to it. I took this yesterday. It's a little dark because...
okay.
But this kid's getting his hair cut.
No fun whatsoever.
But I... Because I don't have the... I don't have... You know, I did... You know what? It was very gratifying because you've always said, just try it. You got to take pictures of people. So we were walking by the barber shop. And I said, oh, I want a picture of that. And Lisa said, just go ahead. Stick your head in and say, can I take a picture of that? And so I did. And the dad was sitting there. And I said, and I asked the kid and I asked the barber. And the dad was sitting there. This was my favorite right there. They all said yes. But, of course, because it's a kid and it's in a business.
I
got to
be kind of careful there.
But I love it. And you know, it was so gratifying. I did what you recommended, which is show them the picture. I showed everybody the, mm-hmm. and they were all happy.
Builds trust. Shows them what an awesome photographer you are. So they have a lot of trust all of a sudden.
Here's one with it shows a bokeh on that lens, which is the bokeh, which is just gorgeous.
And it pure cream.
Yeah, it's just beautiful bokeh, and it picks up the red very nicely. Red's hard to do.
Oh, red is the red color channel is the one that blows out first.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's
a nice image.
What happens when you blow up? Do you have the histogram set to RGB?
So
it shows you all three color channels. Because what can happen is if you don't have it switched to RGB, you have switched it to the average, then the red channel might be completely blown out while the other ones are not. And then it averages them out and it looks just normal. But what happens if you blow out one color channel is that color will just be flat in the picture. You will lose all the detail. So red rose petals. That happens in red rose petals.
Yeah, that's why I always try some red flowers. The other thing that this camera does is it shoots in S-Log 2. A log, and oh. Instead of a flat color profile, it does logarithmic. And it's the problem is you have to process it.
You have to process, and I think that's more used in film, right? Video shooting.
And so it's this is an amazing. This will shoot 4K, 4K in S-Log. Incredible wow. video. So it was one of the reasons
at
I got
at night
it.
With no light, right?
Yeah. Mm. But I've been shooting some stuff for S-Log, and then letting Lightroom fix it up. It's dark, but it comes out pretty nice. And then you have all this extra information, so you can bring up the dark stuff.
Days.
Yeah,
yeah, you can bring up the so much stuff from almost nothing. Yeah.
But it looks a little washed out when you first shoot it because here I'll show you. It looks like this.
Yep.
Because it's flat. It's you're not getting all the Leo Laporte. The tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, still here. His, make sure you check out discoverthetopfloor.com for his podcasts, his workshops. He's going to Ireland. Too late for that one, but he's got some great ones coming up. And we couldn't let you go, Chris, without getting another assignment.
Yep, I have one prepared. Fits kind of the time of the year, harvest.
Oh, I like that. Now that I can do. We got a lot of harvesting
going on. There's lots
going
on the countryside right now. Yeah. So
we got the grape vineyards up a little bit because we're in wine country.
Oh, yes.
The corn maize will be coming in for Halloween. You know, they got the corn growing.
Yep.
Harvest. So here's how that works. We ask you to take pictures with anything you got. Camera phone's fine. Illustrating the word, the idea, the concept, harvest. Doesn't have to be a literal harvest. You know, you get to say what that means. And then upload that picture to Flickr. That's free. If you don't have an account, just create one. It's worth having if you're a photography buff. And then we have a tech guy group on Flickr. Go there, submit the picture. Make sure you tag it harvest so we know it's for that. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, will get your picture in there. One a week, up to four total. And we'll pick three next month for a review. Thank you, Chris. Safe travels.
Absolutely.
I know you're off to Ireland.
I will be back in 3 weeks from now. So, everyone, I'll be back, I promise.
We'll see you then. Thank you. Take care, Chris.
Bye.
Chuck, Nashville, Tennessee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hi, Chuck.
Oh, howdy. You know, when I fired up my computer to see watch you today, first thing I got was a big sign up that says, we have a reserved copy of Windows for you.
Yeah, don't you want it, Chuck? Why don't you want it?
Well, not until they get me a suitable replacement for Windows Media Center.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because, like right now, I'm recording a kart race or IndyCar race on Windows Media Center while I'm watching you. I can't do both.
Yeah, you probably should not upgrade. I think you're right. Let me ask, though, I did not have Windows Media Center installed. Let me ask somebody in the chat room. If you install Windows 10 and you have Media Center, does it delete it? Does it get rid of it, or is it still there? I know you can't get a new version of it. In fact, Microsoft hasn't updated that program in 7 years. But does it actually delete it? That's the question. So we want to get rid of the Windows 10 advertisement.
Well, if you give me a suitable replacement for a Media Center that will let me record sporting events, you know, and play them back, no. I don't need the rest of the Media Center.
Yeah, the chat room says it would delete it. It would actually delete it from your Windows.
Yeah, I know.
That's rude. You should not. Look, it's one thing to give somebody a free upgrade and have them upgrade in place, but it's another thing to actually delete programs that are already on there. I think that is unacceptable. That's terrible.
Do you know of a good replacement for that will just let me record sporting events and play them back?
No. You have to get additional hardware? Well, you have already a video capture card,
I've got the hardware on this machine. But
the problem, I know of some things like Myth TV that use a different operating system. I believe Microsoft wants everybody to move to the Xbox. They're going to provide that kind of capability in the Xbox One. But what we want is a Windows program that'll run on Windows 10 and will let you record just like a DVR. You know, I don't think you fully can blame Microsoft for this. This really is the movie industry and the TV industry.
I don't watch movies.
But you could use that to record movies, burn it to a DVD, and then put a blanket out on your front lawn and sell it. And they don't want you to do that. So that's why what they want you to do is buy a sealed box like a TiVo or your cable company DVR for that, because they can keep you from getting the bits out and putting them on a disc. They can't do that with Windows Media Center. When you record with Windows Media Center, you have a copy of that show, right?
Right.
So I believe it's Hollywood and their lawyers that really talked Microsoft into killing this.
I don't care about Hollywood.
I don't either. And you're not a pirate. You just want to do what you want to do, and I don't blame you.
You know, I recorded 4 races this weekend. I'll be watching them over the next 2 weeks.
You're using Windows 7 right now?
Right.
I would stick with it.
Well, yeah, I've got Windows 7. I've got still got XP on my machine that does real work. So
No, you don't. And it's none of their business. And I would say forget it. There are, by the way, people. There's a Kickstarter campaign going on. There are people who are trying to create replacements. Jay River makes something that's similar. But I think it's not worth it. I would not upgrade to Windows 10 because it's going to make it hard to do what you want to do. Stick, if you got it working and it's working fine, stick with it. Windows 7 will be supported for many years to come. You're still going to get updates.
But how to get rid of this silly notification?
Ah, that's another matter of, I think, considerable upset, because that's an ad. And if you've decided you don't want the product, I don't want to see the ad. And if this is my version, this is my computer, take your stinking ad off my computer. I don't blame you.
Well, maybe somebody will post something on your site here about how to get rid of it. It don't have to be live.
There are a couple of things you can do. There is the ad, that upgrade to Windows 10 thing, came as a Windows update. The update number is 303-5583. So you can go and uninstall that hotfix, KB303-5583.
No, I'll look that up and do it.
Yeah, if you Google it, you can find it too. And uninstalling that will get rid of it. And I hope Microsoft stops pushing that. It worries me that you might uninstall it and then get the update back. And you got to do updates. Don't stop doing updates, okay?
Oh, never.
Never. I like hearing that. But I feel like this is really annoying. I don't think Microsoft should be. It was an annoying ad to begin with. And if you've decided you don't want it, I think it's very annoying that they should push that on you. You can't hide it, you know. You can drag it to another part of the system tray. But I just feel like this is not okay. It's one thing if they give away a free operating system, but you bought Windows 7. You bought that PC. That's your property, and they're kind of sticking their hand out, reaching into your computer and putting something there. And that bothers the heck out of me. So, you can remove that update. It may come back. If you Google remove Windows 10 ad, you'll find a number of sites from reputable magazines and stuff. Make sure you get it from a reputable source. It'll tell you how to do it. I feel if you've decided I don't want it, there should be a box that you check. Say, I don't want it. Don't bother me anymore. And it goes away. At the very least, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, Seton requires special hardware. He's already got his capture card, right? He wants a software-only replacement, for Windows Media Center. That's not Seton, or is it? Maybe I misunderstood. I thought Seton was hardware. Yeah, it's a tuner, right? They're cable car tuners. He doesn't, I'm not going to say go out and spend $200 on a cable car tuner. He's already got a solution. But, so they do have an app for Android. I don't think that's what we're talking about. I don't know of anything really great for that. J-River, hey. I think the right answer is you got Windows 7 and Windows Media Center. Just stick with it. It's working. You got the hardware. You got it all set up. It's working great. Why change? I think the right answer is, how do I get rid of this Windows 10 annoyance? Why should he upgrade? I don't think he should. Neither does that guy. Oh, you missed him. Yeah, I do think for people who have don't have a vested interest in any particular solution, that eventually the Xbox One will be the right way. So we'll put all the alternative media centers in the show notes, of course, because people are giving us lots of good solutions. And I think for that caller, best thing to do is just stick with Windows 7. He's got it all set up. It's all working. You know, why spend hours getting something else working? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Smartphone season is upon us. Apple, of course, sets this calendar by releasing new iPhones every September. The rumor is strong on this one that Apple will have new iPhones September 9th. That's a Wednesday. And they'll be available for order that following Friday, September 11th, and available to purchase in store or arrive via FedEx on the following Friday, September 18th. And that's true to form. That's, in fact, how Apple's done it the last few years. It will be, we believe, something like an iPhone 6S. They don't usually redesign the hardware in off years, in the odd years. So we expect existing hardware designs, kind of like the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, but maybe some additional features. People are starting to get excited about the camera. They're expected to make it a 12-megapixel high-quality camera that's capable of shooting 4K video. This is really playing catch-up for Apple. A lot of times that's what they do with the iPhone. They're never the first to introduce something these days. Mostly they wait until something's perfected and then put it out in the iPhone. Although they were the first, they really kind of, I think, introduced fingerprint reading. They weren't the first exactly, but boy, by putting fingerprint readers on the iPhone 6, they've really jump-started that. And now really a phone without a fingerprint reader is like a day without sunshine. They also will apparently include this new Force Touch feature. They have it on the Apple Watch and some of the Apple laptops. There's a tap, but then there's a kind of press that gives you a secondary action. I'm not sold necessarily on Force Touch. I don't think that secondary action is obvious. It isn't widely supported in apps yet. Mostly just Apple. And until apps really start to agree on what should happen when you Force Touch, it's going to be a mystery meet, and I don't like that. I don't like mysteries on my computing platforms. But companies who know the iPhone's going to get all the attention in the next couple of weeks have already started shipping other new phones. I just got my Galaxy Note 5. I got the Galaxy S6 Edge when it came out a few months ago. Liked it at first. Really thought it was beautiful. It's a really beautifully designed phone. But in the long run, was dissatisfied by performance. It was subject to performance issues that other Android phones I've used have had. So kind of a strange disappearing, reappearing sluggishness, hesitancy, like the phone was busy. It was, I'm thinking, leave me alone for a minute. And I find that very annoying. I want a phone to be responsive. It should, most of the time, maybe in the middle of a download, maybe not, but most of the time it should respond when I touch it and do what I ask it to do. And the Galaxy S6 didn't. It had a great camera. Man, I loved that camera. Most beautiful screen I'd ever seen. But it was like, you know, a baby. It wasn't cooperating. So I kind of put it aside. I've been trying some other phones. But this Note 5, I don't know what Samsung did. Maybe they fixed the software. Maybe they did put more memory in it. It has 4 gigs of RAM. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe they tweaked the processor a little bit, but I don't have any of the hesitancy. Certainly one of the things that they did is they backed off on their customizations to Android. All the manufacturers besides Google, you know, they always put little things in that do have two negatives. One, it makes it hard for them to update the phone because any updates Google pushes out, they have to test with their modifications. But it also often means it's just worse because they're not as good at user interface design. Samsung's adaptation, TouchWiz, was really kind of a classic in that regard. It just slowed the thing down, didn't make a lot of sense, was ugly. And I think Samsung has listened to users who've complained about it for years, and each time they release a new Galaxy phone, it gets less and less, and the Note 5 is no exception. It's barely got any TouchWiz at all, and I like it. That might be the other reason it doesn't hesitate much. Just a gorgeous screen. Same camera as in the S6, which is an amazing camera. As good as any camera phone on the market. Better than most. And in my opinion, better than the iPhone. Just gorgeous. It's a beautiful screen. They use OLED screens for their phones, which give you really good contrast. Black blacks, white whites, crisp colors. Maybe not some of the most natural colors out there. But good enough, and certainly vibrant, and I really like that vibrance. So I've been very happy. I haven't had it forever. I've only had it for about 5 days, but so far so good. This is the phone. The Note 5 is the phone I'll be carrying until the next phone, which could be any day now at this rate. Unfortunately, in the U.S. anyway, you have to buy it through a carrier. I got the AT&T version. But all the carriers have it. There is no unlocked, currently no unlocked version in the United States, which is a shame because I'd really like to, I'd prefer to run it on T-Mobile. But I can live with AT&T. It's one of the reasons I have all those different SIM cards is because, frankly, I have to have phones from every carrier. I did get the OnePlus 2, the long-awaited and hotly anticipated flagship killer from OnePlus. Chinese company. They don't sell them through carriers. They just sell it direct. It's about half the price of the Note 5. The Note 5 is over $800 unsubsidized. It's an outrageously expensive phone. About $400 for the OnePlus, but it's about half as good. Camera's almost as good. Screen, definitely not as good. It has a fingerprint reader, which is good. It's as good as the Samsung fingerprint reader. I really feel like that's a must-have nowadays. But it doesn't have NFC, which is kind of odd. You'd expect it to have NFC on an Android device, so you can use Android Pay and other NFC features. That's a weird thing to leave out. So the OnePlus 2, if you need to save money, great phone. I almost want to call it a great camera, don't I? That's a great phone with some compromises. But at $400, it's pretty amazing. And by the way, the battery life is superb, as it was last year on the OnePlus One. 20 hours plus. Easily gets me through the day. Wish I could say the same for the Note 5. I like the Note 5 so much that I'm willing to put up with still not great battery life. Better than the S6, better than the Note 4, even though it's a smaller battery. Not a removable battery, by the way, or a SD card. It's just what you see is what you get. But I've been able to get about 12 hours battery life. That's enough to get me from my wake-up to dinner time. And then the fast charging means that I can get back on the road after a half hour, an hour dinner. So I think that's adequate. I can live with it. It's not ideal. I'd like to get through the whole day, but it's enough. Such a gorgeous phone and such a great camera. This is, my current favorite. Now, we'll see. The iPhone 6S or whatever they call it, and the 6S Plus will be out in a couple of weeks. I'm still waiting to see a Moto X, the new Moto X Pure. I've really been a fan of Motorola. They make a really clean version of Android on their phones. The Moto G is my favorite for the $200 price range. That is an amazing phone. Great battery life, but the camera's not great. The pictures on the screen isn't as good. But for $200, that's about what you'd expect. It's still an amazing phone. Moto X will be available for order September 3rd, so I'll get one as quickly as I can and let you know what I think. But if you see a giant phone in my pocket, that's what that is. That's the Note 5, and I think currently the best Android phone out there. Yeah, I think it's safe to say that. I'm thinking of the LG G4, no, the S6 Plus. That's the big version of the S6. Pretty much the same. You don't get the stylus, though. It's pretty much the same as the Note 5, but you don't get the stylus. And I think the stylus is, whether you use it or not, kind of a cool feature. For instance, if the phone is off and you pop the stylus out, you could take notes on the phone, which is great when you're in a bar and you're trying to remember somebody's phone number. It's or something like that. I like the idea of just being able to take notes on the phone even though it's off and saving them out, handwritten notes. Anyway, little in a nutshell review of the Galaxy Note 5. Brand new from Samsung. Very expensive, but worth it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, whenever I pick up girls at the bar, I like to use the Samsung Galaxy Note 5. You ever get a number and then the napkin gets wet and you can't read the last three digits? Do you have somebody's number?
It's a caller.
Oh.
No, they're not hitting on me.
You know what? I never have ever picked up at a girl in a bar, not once, in 58 years.
Neither have I.
Good for you. You see? We got morals.
No, this is the number of one of our callers who's going through hell right now.
Oh. No. And what, are you going to call her back?
No, it's him. It's the guy that called a few weeks ago, the AT&T. They cut off his lifeline.
Oh, that guy, yeah. And he's anything?
No.
He's
no
still
update.
Suffering,
he
huh?
He was just trying to get more.
And
I don't know what to tell him.
Yeah, I mean, we're not a consumer
exactly.
advocacy. You know, you should call us, I don't know who does it in L.A., but.
I sent him to the Michael Finney equivalent.
Yeah. There must be a Michael Finney guy down there.
His name is Rick Romero, I think.
Yeah,
and
good.
I gave him his phone number. It's
good.
That's all I can do.
Oh, man. This is my nickname, says, you should lift more weights, Leo, then you could pick up more women. I don't really want to pick up women. I have a lovely wife. In fact, let me show you my lovely wife. It's great pictures of her. Oh, I'm not on the camera, am I? This is with the fancy camera. But remember, it's easy to copy them over to the phone with it. I like that one of her. I think it's a nice picture. You see, I take a lot of shots. I don't know why I have a manhole cover, but I do. And then we're on the dock. This display is just stunning. You see how fast it is, too. These are giant files. Yeah, I take too many pictures. Kind of thought that was interesting with the. No, I don't. It wasn't in burst mode. I just first of all, they're doubled up because there's the original, and then there's the JPEG. So it's each photo is doubled. But I shoot a lot. I mean, it's digital. Why not? Like this kid, the expressions. You know what's so funny on this though? So I said, oh, you're really hating this haircut. He said, no, I'm not hating the haircut. I'm listening to audible.com. He had a iPod Touch under the bib, and he showed me he was listening to Diary of a Wimpy Kid while he was getting his haircut. I thought that was the cutest thing ever. Yes, the manhole cover says made in Oakland. It does. It does indeed. The back is great, too, of this. It's glass instead of that cheap plastic. It just feels nice. It's kind of like the Edge. But, of course, I'll probably keep it in a crappy case. Yeah, T-Mobile might offer the Note 5. I just couldn't get it from them. I didn't mean to say that if I had the unlocked one, I would put a T-Mobile SIM in it. But I don't because I got it from AT&T. Why did I not get it from T-Mobile? I think they couldn't. I think the first one that I could get it from was AT&T. I wanted to get it as quickly as I could. I know, the case makes it like the old Samsung. There's this neat thing, though. I like this like mini display. But you're right. I've been keeping the case off because I like the phone so much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. To the phones we go. Chris is in Virginia. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Chris.
How's the show? How you doing?
I'm great. How you doing?
All right. Yeah, I'm playing the Note 5 when it comes out. But
is that you think that's the phone for you?
I think so, even though it's never removable battery, which I'm...
I know.
With that.
I know. It bugs me. So instead of carrying a second battery around, which I did with the Note 4, I'm just going to carry a battery pack around. It's a little more bulky, but that's, you know, that's the other way to do it. The other thing that's funny to me about this is a 5.7-inch phone. Used to be, if you had a phone this big, people laughed at you, didn't they? Not anymore. People, it's like commonplace. Everybody wants a big phone. So why not? I mean, let's go for it. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm having issues with my... In the past, I had phones and the batteries would, like, drain really quickly. And I would get the battery replaced and it doesn't really help.
Yeah.
And then if I extend a battery, it doesn't help either. So I don't know what I do to use the battery.
The key is to figure out what's draining the battery. The good news is now both the iPhone and the newest Android devices running Lollipop, you can, in the settings, get a lot more granular information about what's draining the battery. So if you're an Android phone user, you go to the battery display, and you can actually drill down and see what applications are using it and how they're using it. You know, what's the big battery drain on it? If that's not enough, you can even get a third-party app. I, for purposes of testing on these phones, I always run the GSAM battery monitor. And that keeps track of, over a period of time, how the performance has been of the battery and gives me an average. Like right now I'm looking on the Note 5, after 5 days of use, I can expect about 12 hours and 15 minutes per complete charge. It will also let you drill down into the apps and the other parts of the operating system that are using juice. So that's what you need to figure out, is why is your battery draining? One place batteries will drain faster is places with weak or poor cell signals. So if the phone has to work hard to get a cell signal, it's even worse. In fact, you'd notice this if you left your phone on in an airplane when there's no cell signal at all. The battery could drain almost visibly quickly as the phone turns up the juice and tries to find a signal. So if it may simply be your geographic location that's giving you a hard time. That's why I don't really like to give out battery numbers. You'll even see battery benchmarks on some of the tech websites. And, you know, for instance, I can't remember who it was. Was it a non-tech? Somebody rated this phone at 10 hours. Now, that's only meaningful. That doesn't mean you'll get 10 hours. It's only meaningful if you compare it to other phones under the same exact conditions with the same exact test. So for me, I know, because I pretty much use a phone the same way. I'm not geographically wandering around. I know that 12 hours is fairly high for me. The only phone that's better is something like the Moto G, which gets more, or the OnePlus 2. But 12 hours for you, you might get 2 hours because, I don't know, maybe your signal is weak. It's a good idea to look for apps that tend to wake the phone up. Of course, the biggest battery drain on any smartphone is the screen. A high-res screen is going to drain it faster. A brighter screen is going to drain it faster. And if apps are waking up the phone, turning the screen on, that's going to drain it faster. In fact, in most cases, the phone uses the least amount of power when it's just sitting on your desk or your nightstand and it's not doing anything. Then it turns on just periodically to get the latest mail, to, you know, I don't check stuff, look for notifications. You don't want it to wake up more than once every few minutes. Those are called wake locks. And if you have an app that is kind of unruly, that can cause a problem. Both Apple and Google have done a lot to reduce wake locks, trying to group applications together, saying, we're going to turn the phone on in 10 minutes. All of you, get your data then. Don't ask me for anything before then. Keeping that phone asleep is going to extend your battery life because you're not using it all the time. Now, if you are using it all the time, if you're watching movies, constantly playing music, you're going to get less battery life, obviously. So it's really hard to tell people what the battery life is going to be. You really only can give them relative comparisons. This is better than that. But your mileage absolutely will vary, much more so than in a car and gas mileage, because the way people use phones really varies. I see people who are buried in their phone all day long. You know, you're not going to be able to get a full day battery life out of that. So I don't know what the answer is. You did the things that you would do, because the first thing is you might suspect, well, maybe the battery is worn out, but you replaced the battery. You even got a battery pack, and that didn't seem to help. That means that that phone and the applications on that phone are draining your battery. They're using too much juice. So start looking in the battery section on the phone at what is using juice. You might, for instance, turn off updates on Facebook, Twitter, tell your email, only check email when I say to check email. Things like that can make a big difference. The biggest difference, though, I'll repeat it, that I've seen is if you have a weak cell signal. That can cause a massive difference. The truth is, I've seen a lot of apps to try to improve battery life. Some of them help a little bit. But really, what you should do is get a phone with better battery life. That's that, and that means, in most cases, a smaller, less high-res screen. You know, turn some of those things off. If you've got a live wallpaper in the background that's constantly showing fishes swimming by, that might be a good thing to turn off. 8888 Ask Leo. Peter in Escondido, California. Hi, Peter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, it's not Peter. It's going to be... No, I don't. I've never seen this icon. What is that phone icon? What is that there? What did I do? Oh, what's going on? It's doing something weird. I don't understand what's going on.
Can you put it on hold? Because you dropped the last guy.
I dropped the last guy. Let's put that guy on hold. I can't drop Chris. Our phones are acting up. Ah, you took care of Chris. All right. Let's try one more time. Walter, nope. Carl. This phone system's driving me crazy. Carl in Rhode Island, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Just a quick question on the use of SecureSafe for storing passwords.
Hi,
it's a great tool. I've used it forever, and I'm just concerned with the security of it.
I am not familiar with it. SecureSafe, huh? Is it an encryption program? What is it?
I guess it's an encryption program. It's an online program. I have to tell
it's
you.
It's in Switzerland.
There you go.
It's got to be safe. So what this is like a Dropbox, but it's a Dropbox that is claiming to be more secure, I guess, right? So you synchronize files to their cloud, and it's more secure.
Well, you can do that, but I don't use it for that purpose. The purpose that I use it for is to, again, for free, they'll let you store up to, I think, either 12 or 15 passwords.
As a password safe. Okay. Hang on for a second. We got to take a break, but we'll be right back in a couple of minutes, and I want to dig more into this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to spend a little more time on this call with Carl. Carl in Rhode Island. He is suggesting a program, a website, called Secure Safe. Oh, boy. Hello. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And there's a reason that we might want to talk about this. The company called Voila folded its doors. This was another one of those Dropbox-style synchronization, online cloud storage solutions. We had recommended Voila because it was trust no one. You kept the keys. And SecureSafe says they do it the same way. The company, they say, cannot access your data. They have two-factor authentication. They use SSL, AES encryption. To me, it looks pretty darn good. And this is something that some people value. In this day and age where you're worried about United States law enforcement getting subpoenas to look into servers, this is a Swiss company. So all of the operations and all of the servers are in Switzerland, which, of course, has very strong privacy laws, and so presumably is safer than the U.S. I think this looks fine. So they let you for free store up to 15 passwords. Is that how you use it?
I think that's how many I've got. I've had it for probably 5 years now, and it's worked flawlessly. It's a web. They've got an app for your iPhone. So I've got my work passwords, my personal passwords on there, and it's just, if you're using your iPhone, it's just a question of to log into SecureSafe, they do a fingerprint read, and there's your password. And if you don't want to create your own password, SecureSafe will actually create passwords for you, and then, store them along with the URL or the,
I'll have to try it. It looks great. I do recommend password safes. The one I use is called LastPass. It's free if you want to use it on Android. It's $1 a month. It's $12 if you want to use it on your mobile device. $12 a year, but it's not more safe, I wouldn't say, than this. It's hard to tell because you can make a website that says all these things. Right. It's not, unless it's open source and somebody can vet and read the source code and say yes, no, this is exactly as they say. You have to somewhat trust them. But I have no reason not to trust them. And, of course, the using software is an exercise in trust, whether it's LastPass or Secure. Unless it's open source, you don't really know. Now, LastPass has been very cooperative with my security guru, Steve Gibson, who does our security podcast. He's looked at the source code. He's vetted it, and he believes that LastPass is exactly as it says it is. I'll have to ask him about SecureSafe. But just looking at the website, they check all the right boxes. So if you're happy with it, I say fine.
Yeah, they've got all my passwords, and it's worked well for me for the better part of 4 or 5 years. You just wonder sometimes if it's...
Well, you're right, too, because, of course, you're giving them the keys to the kingdom. The reason I like a password manager is because you only have to remember one password, the password for your safe. In your case, you don't even have to remember that. You use your fingerprint, although you'll want to at least make a note of your password in case you get a new phone or something.
When you sign up, they give you a key, and they tell you to print that key out and put it someplace secure, because if you lose your password, they have no access and they have no way to turn it back on for you.
That's what you want. That means that they can't, you know, some snoopy engineer at their office can't read your stuff. More importantly, if the Swiss police or the NSA come knocking on their door, they can say credibly, "I'm sorry, we can't give you anything. There's nothing. We don't know anything." That's what you want. That's true password protection. That's how it should be. And I like using a password safe, even though it is, you know, potentially risky if you get used a bad one, because it's a single point of failure. If a bad guy got into your password safe, you'd be in real trouble. But it's better than using the same password on multiple sites, which most people do because they don't want to memorize a bunch of passwords. It encourages you to use long, strong, unmemorable passwords, which it does for you, in fact, right? It generates good passwords. So I think all in all, that sounds like a good solution. And I don't know anything about them, but reading the website, they check all the right boxes.
Well, I'm glad you concur, and I feel just a little bit better. Yeah.
And that Ashley Madison site, you know, that's safe, too. I think it had the
trick. Yeah, I've stayed away from that.
Good man. I have, too. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. But that's actually a point, to bring up. Ashley Madison said, "We're secure." Ashley Madison said, "For $19, we'll delete your records." None of that was true. And the problem is anybody can assert anything they want. Until they get caught. Ashley Madison had all of those, you know, Trusted Security Award and 100% discreet service. And look, SSL Secure with a big padlock on it. It must be safe. Except it wasn't. And I don't know who gave them that Trusted Security Award. It's a nice looking award with a gold medal and a ribbon and everything. But that looks like something they just made up, because there's no link to anybody or anything. It's just, we've got a Trusted Security Award. I got it right here, see? But this is the point. Anybody can assert anything they want on a website. It's easy. And it isn't always true. In fact, the story goes that the hackers, I don't know if this is true or self-serving, but the hackers who broke into Ashley Madison were incensed because Ashley Madison said they were secure when they weren't. Ashley Madison said they were deleting records for $19 a pop when they weren't. And the hackers say, now we have downloaded 300 gigabytes of data, not just the database of customers, but corporate memos, emails, everything that was on the servers. We got into the servers. They said, we've been in there for years. We've been watching them operate. And they finally, this is self-serving on their part, the Impact team, but they said, we finally just got fed up. It doesn't seem like they're hoping to put Ashley Madison out of business. As far as I can tell, they're still there. They haven't gone out of business yet. In fact, I'm willing to bet there are people signing up for it right now. I love this badge. Trusted Security Award. You know what, the initials are TSA, so it kind of implies that maybe the TSA have given them an award. Somehow I doubt that. 8888 Ask Leo. Glenn on the line. He's our next caller from Missouri. Hello, Glenn.
Hello. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I went to turn my system back to Windows 8.
You got sick of Windows 10? And you rolled it back.
Yeah. I had too many errors in 10. I must have not did it by...
Yeah, I actually did exactly that. I had problems. I couldn't get it activated, not all the drivers. So I did the same thing. And they say you have 30 days to roll back.
Well, we're less than 30 days.
And what does it say?
24th. I rolled it back the 30th.
Yeah.
So... But it says, when I rolled it back, it says restoring incomplete. I get a message in the corner and kicked it up, and it says Windows System 32, and then it has an arrow.
Yeah. I think the message here is don't rely on that rollback. And that's why we say make a backup before you upgrade to Windows 10, because while Microsoft promises you can go backwards, I had the same problem, by the way. I wasn't able to roll it back. It said, no, you can't roll back. They store or try to store your setup from your previous version so you can roll back. But what if the drive is full or there's an error? It's going to fail. That's life. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think they do that to just reassure you. Don't worry. We could put it back. Don't worry. You should always back up. I had a backup, thank goodness. Actually, you know what I did? So first I did the Windows 10, go back to your previous version of Windows. And that didn't work. And then I went to the, in the control panel, restore your system to its original operating condition. Well, let me see what it is. It's in the recovery stuff. Let's see here. Recovery options. Go back to an earlier build. I think I reset it. And on my Dell anyway, that didn't reset it to Windows 10. That reset it to the operating system the Dell came with. So Windows 10 had not overwritten that recovery partition yet. So that might be something to try, Glenn, is if Windows 10 rollback to Windows 8 or whatever version doesn't work, go to Update and Security Recovery and reset this PC. That, for me, did work on my Dell, and it got me back to 8.1. And then I let Microsoft do the upgrade instead of rushing it because I had downloaded an ISO and all that. I just waited till Microsoft said, okay, it's time for you to upgrade, and that worked better. I love Windows 10. I had a problem, Captain J, because I had the Windows 8.1 laptop, late model Dell, and I was impatient. So I downloaded the ISO and installed Windows 10 that way, and it didn't activate. Took us a couple of days, didn't activate. Plus, it didn't get all the drivers right. It didn't get the Dell update stuff, this Dell custom software. So I thought, I think I should not have done this. So I did that reset your PC back to the way it was when you got it from the factory, and it did that. I wanted a clean install anyway, so I'd already backed up all my data. Did that, back to 8.1. I waited to see if it was activated. It was. And then I just waited until Microsoft told me to upgrade to Windows 10. In fact, it did that immediately. I got that full screen pop-up that said, okay, we're ready. And then went ahead and did it, and it was activated out of the box. All the drivers were there. The Dell recovery stuff, the Dell backup stuff, all was on there. So I think what happened was I downloaded a generic ISO, which didn't work very well. And my advice is wait until you get the go-ahead from Microsoft, because what happened in my case was I think they were working with Dell, and they made a Dell OEM recovery that was specifically for my machine that worked better. I think Windows 10 is well worth getting. Well worth getting. If you're happy with Windows 7, that's fine. I think I'm sure that it's going to be. It's more secure. Windows 10. It's more reliable. I don't. I like Cortana. I like the new features. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the day. Let's see if we can do it. Walter in Huntington, West Virginia. Yes, it worked. I'm sorry about that, Walter. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for hanging on.
You're welcome. My sister has a Windows 7 laptop that she hadn't connected to the Internet for 2 years. So after the connection, I know we need a lot of updates, so I told her to go into the control panel and the Windows update window, and it was automatically selected to do automatic updates.
Good.
We told it what day and to do it every day and the time, and we hit OK. Well, it doesn't seem to have updated.
Yeah, I would do it manually. I would actually say check for updates, let it churn a little bit. It'll give you some updates, and I would say go ahead and do that because you're so far behind that you're going to take several reboots. It's going to take you maybe a half day to get all the updates on there.
Okay.
So I think the automatic would work. It's just going to take weeks.
Okay.
In a case like this, force it.
So go to check for updates.
Yep. It'll spin for a while. It'll find updates. You don't have to do the optional ones. Okay. Is she going to go to Windows 10, you think?
No, she'll stick to Windows 7. All right, well, she's then, novice at this, so.
Yeah, very important that she do these updates.
Yes.
You know, okay. it's not necessary if she doesn't go online.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
That you're very safe when you're air-gapped. That's what they call it. There's a gap between you and the Internet.
Yes.
That's composed of 6 inches of solid air. You're safe.
Right.
You don't have to get an update. I mean, there might be bugs, but there's no security issues. But the minute you connect to the Internet, all those issues come back. She should not surf around until she has applied every critical update that she can get. And it says there, you know, you check for updates and it says there are no updates. Then you're okay.
I gotcha. Okay, Leo. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Force it. If it don't fit, force it. Now, Murray and Tustin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you.
I have heard you speak many times on antivirus, but I'm still a little bit unclear. I've got Windows 10. I've got three systems, three antivirus.
You don't need any antivirus.
I don't?
So for two reasons. One, Windows 10 comes with an antivirus. Microsoft finally saw the light.
Good.
It's called Defender, and you'll see it immediately. Make sure it's updating automatically.
Okay.
But the other reason is really more significant, which is that because viruses spread so fast now, no antivirus can keep up. You know, the way an antivirus works is it goes out periodically, sometimes even as much as once a day, and downloads updates. Those updates are new virus definitions. The problem is those new virus definitions, not only are they only updated once a day at most, they may take a week to create, right? You've got to find the virus. You've got to find a definition. You've got to update it. In that week, you can be devastated because viruses now spread virtually instantly. They're called zero day for a reason. It takes 0 days to spread all over the world.
Right.
So an antivirus is really a backup. It is not your primary security device.
Okay.
It's much less important than you knowing what not to do on the Internet. Then it's the most important. It's funny. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Google did a survey of regular users and security experts and then talked about the differences. Regular users, number one advice to stay secure, get an antivirus.
Yeah.
It's like number 10 on the list of security experts. Number one for the security experts, update, update, update. Keep your Windows update, keep updated, keep anything that goes on the Internet updated, including browsers, plugins, Flash, all of that. That's the most important thing you can do, not an antivirus.
If I switch from Microsoft Edge to Google or Netscape, does the Defender still operate?
Yep.
Oh, good.
Defender is basically like any other antivirus. It's a scanning engine, and it has heuristics that watch virus-like activity. It's not the best antivirus in the world, but the point is no antivirus is the best anymore. They're really not.
Yeah.
They're not in a first line of defense. They're like if you get an old virus somehow, it'll find it, and sometimes it can block virus. But honestly, the way these malware authors are so smart now, they just go right around it.
Just one last one. Whenever I run the super anti-spyware, I see there's sometimes 100, 200 adware things.
Yeah, that's another problem I have. Those are not problems. Those are cookies.
Right.
But the program is choosing to interpret them as privacy violations. And some people who are extremely privacy conscious would agree. I'm not one of them. I think that this is how websites work. They keep track of what you did, where you were, what your password is, things like that. That's not a privacy exception to me. But if it is to you, then those are valuable points of information.
Not into that.
No.
Well, that's great. Back to Windows Defender.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. This is so important. The key to security in any operating system is keep it up to date. Keep anything that goes online up to date. Be very careful about what you install, about what links you click, whether in email or instant messenger or on Facebook or on web pages. Don't, you know, the way you get in trouble is by going to a malicious site or getting malicious software. And an antivirus, in most cases, won't protect you. Because remember, an antivirus has to be a good citizen. It has to let you do what you want to do. If you want to install that malware, the antivirus, chances are just going to say, yeah, well, okay, be it on your head. Anthony in Ontario, our last call of the day. Hello, Anthony.
Holy moly, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. You made it. Under the wire.
I did. Okay, here's a quick question for you. I have a tenant in my basement I like to share my internet with. I have a Motorola surfboard bringing the internet into the house.
That's your cable modem?
Yep, and then it goes to an Airport Extreme.
They have a guest mode on that thing. I'd turn that on and give that to your basement tenant.
But the only thing with that is this guy's going to be a tech kid. He's going to want a lot more access than he wants a hardwire access because I think he's an IT professional.
Okay, that's risky because if you give him hardwire access, it's hard to isolate him. You're going to have to get a second router.
Oh, beautiful. So I can go from the surfboard to a second router, then go to my Extreme and then give him the access to the second router.
Actually, it's you. The really good way to do this is with three routers.
But, oh, nice.
I don't have time to explain it, however. But the idea is you can, in effect, segment him on your network so that he doesn't have access to your stuff. Because what you don't want him to do is going back through the surfboard out into your system and being able to look at your stuff. So, it's sufficient, I think. It's sufficient, I think, if your surfboard has two Ethernet ports, send one to your router, one to his router. And I think that's going to be fine. Or not router, in his case, either directly to him or to a switch that goes to him.
Yeah, no, the surfboard doesn't have a second Ethernet. So okay. I think the three
routers. That's why you need three routers.
Okay, perfect.
I think you can figure it out from there. That's a hint. And then now you can search the internet. Practicallynetworked.com probably has some information somewhere like that. But yeah, you can do it securely. It technically perfect. Needs three routers. I can't, you know, it's kind of complicated, but I think you can do it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I appreciate it. You just don't want him going upstream into your system. So I think you can figure it out from there. That if you had two Ethernets on your surfboard, that would be another way to do it. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks so much, Kim Schaffer. Great phone work. Fabulous callers all day. Nathan Staton, the nicest musical selection ever. And, of course, to you, you did a great job listening. Just pat yourself on the back. Well done. Can we do this all again next week? I think I might be a little better at it by then. I'm going to keep practicing. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. I'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.